Welcome to Cardboard Conjecture. We're a podcast about board games where we have opinions and conclusions formed on the basis of incomplete information. This episode of Cardboard Conjecture is brought to you by the great people at Gamesurplus.com. Hey there, this is episode 9 of Cardboard Conjecture. I'm your host, Norm.
And I'm Ryan.
And on today's episode, we're going to discuss my top 10 list.
Norm's top 10.
Norm's top 10 list as of now.
As of right now, like this, yeah.
And from my own collection, none of this, you know.
You have to own these games.
I have to own these games because there's several games that I played from your collection that I could easily put on this list, like Gloomhaven.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't own Gloomhaven, so that, you know.
Yeah, so top 10 games in your collection.
So that one listener who feels sorry, I'm not asking you to buy it, you know, Gloomhaven. I'm just asking you to mock me publicly that yes. I don't have one.
Yes, you have to wear a shirt that says, I do not own Gloomhaven.
What is a cardboard cohort? Well, cardboard cohorts are board gamers banded together who support and inspire one another and become colleagues and friends in the board gaming community. And with that being said, we would like to support the good, the bored, and the ugly. They have a podcast on iTunes, and they record weekly live stream YouTube content. So please check them out. Welcome back to my top 10 list. Norm's top 10 list.
Norm's top 10. I'm excited.
Are you?
I am. I'm actually, honestly, I don't know where this is going to go.
I don't either.
You have lots of games because what people may not know is that Norm and I, our collections are very different based on the fact that if I know Norm owns a game, I don't have to own it.
Yeah. It's part of the community.
There's a very few that I actually still, that there's some double up.
Yeah.
But yeah, games in my collection, Norm usually doesn't own, and games in Norm's collection, I don't own. So I already did my top 10. There are games that are in my collection. I'm interested. I'm intrigued.
Well, the only, and again, you know, as I was going to say, the only rule that I broke, but it's my list. I can make the rules if I want. Yeah. I have an honorable mentions. I have 4 in honorable mentions.
Oh, I didn't do that.
No, yeah, I know. But you did a double and like a, you know.
Oh, yeah, I did. I had a double number of 6.
Yeah, yeah, I have a tie, but my tie is very unique and you kind of, it'll surprise you.
So what was kind of going in your mind? What was it? Because my process was like, I took a look at, because I keep track of stats.
Yeah.
And of games.
And I don't.
And you don't. So I'm kind of interested what's your thought process when you were creating this little bit of a list.
All right, so it comes down to one of my criteria for buying a game lately now is because everybody in my household goes to bed early.
Oh, yes.
So, and I'm a night owl. So one of my criteria is it has to have a legitimate solo play or it is a solo playable game kind of thing.
Okay, so every game on your list has a solo mode?
No, not every game.
Okay.
Because there are, I'd say 5 of the games have to have two to four players.
Okay.
Right. But.
Okay, so about half.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I've kept a balance, right? Another criteria is not necessarily like yours was how many, you know, the frequency of plays. I think mine is more quality of plays because
mine had quality plays.
Yeah, no, but I mean, and necessarily because I probably haven't had the same, game time that you've had.
Right. Cause you came into the hobby a little bit later than I,
yeah.
Than
I've had some catching up to do and
well, you've done that in spades.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think I've
hit the ground running. Like you hit it hard.
Yeah, as my wife says, when I try something new, I don't dip my toe into the pool. I pretty much cannonball with a, you know, hanging onto a deck chair and hanging onto a piece of fence. That's the way I kind of immerse myself. So you ready for this?
I'm ready.
All right. So you don't get to do your voice yet because this is the, unless you want to, you know, say honorable mentions list in your chosen. Go ahead. Let's hear it.
Honorable mentions.
All right. Built in delay.
Okay, so I have four on my honorable mentions list. And
four?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
I know, I couldn't.
Put it together, man.
I couldn't. And out of these four, you've played three of them.
Okay.
So the first one is Kemet.
Oh, wow. That's not on the top 10.
I know.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So Kemet.
Boy, that's a surprise.
Yeah. Kemet is dudes on a board, knife fight in a phone booth.
Yeah.
And that's what it's supposed
game.
To be. So there's no flip the table. Everybody understands that you win points by scrapping. You get rewarded.
Everybody pause this episode and go look up Kemet on BGG, and you'll be like, what?
Yeah. It's as far as the theme goes, it's Egyptian slash fantasy, I guess. And, you know, when we talked about Voyages of Marco Polo, we talked about how there's a lot of OP stuff. Well, in Kemet, you can basically create an OP army or OP. You know, it's insane the amount with these power tiles that you can get. Action point allowance. I really dig that whole system of using the resource. I think the prayer points as your resource to bring in people, buy these power tiles, advance your pyramid.
What's you're so fired up about your honorable mentions.
I know.
This is good. Okay, folks, this is going to be a long one.
I
think this is going to be a long
episode. I'll have to shorten this up. All right, so the next one on my honorable mentions is Great Western Trail.
Again, oh my, okay. I have no idea what your top 10 is going to be then.
That's deck,
two games
the
already.
The deck building, there's kind of city town building, right? Because there's all those
grid movement.
Yeah, and the engineer. I'm still trying to explore the engineer as a legitimate winning strategy.
Well, it has to be coupled with something else.
Yeah,
you have to be. You can't just do just engineer. You have to maybe put it with the cow strategy or the builder strategy.
And I mean, anytime that you have a deck building game with cows, oh, that's moveless. Sorry about that. My next one is Concordia.
Okay, I can see that being on the honorable mention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Concordia is...
fantastic.
It's fantastic. To me, it's like comfort food. If I don't know what to play, it's like, I'll just take a Concordia because I know I'm going to have a good game. There's enough variety of the maps that come out. The Salsa expansion adds some really cool interest. Apart from that, it's a great game, but it just didn't peg into my list. And the last one on my honorable mention list is Welcome to Centerville.
Oh, this is like just recently
the brand new GMT one, and I'm starting to turn into a little GMT fanboy. It is, as I described to you before, it is, for me at least, a combination of Roll Through the Ages, because you use this dice Yahtzee mechanism. So it's a cross between Roll Through the Ages and Suburbia. So instead of you're rolling these dice that have all these values of City Hall or urbanization or education and so on and so forth, and instead of, you know, pegging it on your resource board or writing it on your rolling rate, you are putting cubes onto the map. And then that's when that Suburbia thematic element kicks in, where you have an area control battle going on in the neighborhoods. You have a power struggle in City Hall because of, you know, area influence. There's the education track. That's all about tile collecting. It's just so fantastic. I think I've had three or four plays, and more. I just want to play more.
Yep, I smell a conjecture in the future.
Oh, yeah. So that is my honorable mention list.
Solid list already.
Solid list already. So let's get on with this countdown. All right.
Number 10
for me is one of your favorite designers too. Uwe Rosenberg. Uwe.
Uwe.
At the Gates of Luoyang.
Luoyang. Still a game that I have not played.
I hope there's a lot of these games on this list that you haven't played.
Why would you hope that?
Well, because then I get to play them more, because you're going to want to play them.
Okay. Yeah,
I get to teach them to you. And, kind of dominate and then have you learn the game and then beat the crap out of me. At the Gates of Luoyang is it's Uwe. It's an agriculture, farming, sell your stuff to clients game, and the manner in which the card play comes out in, you know, with your full-time clients, your temporary clients, your market stalls, your farms, like your agricultural engine. I just love it. That one has a solo play, which basically mm-hmm. is my majority of my experience in gameplay is in that solo mode. I would love to play it with other players because of this, you know, card drafting mechanism at the beginning, because everything is driven off these cards.
Mm-hmm.
And you either have the right crops that you're planting, or you have the right clients that are matching your crops that you're planting, or you got the right market stall in your schema or your engine. And it's all about, you know, Uwe, it's all about producing just that little, you know, you're scratching yeah. a pittance of survival.
Right.
And it's that whole balance of at any time, this engine could fall apart and the game could just bury itself.
Cool.
And I love that delicate razor's edge balance of choices and being able to think, well, short term, this is going to help me. But long term,
yes.
I need to get these clients connected to these fields so that I can start generating a revenue and start getting some money so I can get up this fame track. So is a game that I could just see you writing notes going, oh, there's another one I got to play.
Yeah, we need to get this one played this summer.
All right, so that is my number 10, At the Gates of Luoyang.
Oh, so cool.
Number nine
is from one of your favorite companies. You're an ambassador for that company.
Oh.
My number nine, Viticulture. For some reason.
Gonna make some wine.
Gotta make some wine. For some reason, I looked at my collection, and I've got a bit of a worker placement bug. Because
you do own a lot of worker. I own a lot of worker placement. You own, I think between the two of us, we own like a good majority of the worker placement games.
And to me, sometimes worker placement is sort of a six of one, half a dozen of the other version of action point allowance.
Because
mm-hmm. you have some workers, you have all these choices, so it's a matter of what am I picking. So I think that's one of the reasons. And, of course, you know, the passive-aggressive worker placement block all the time. Hey, mm-hmm. you need this one. I'm going before you, so I'm going to take that. The way that the mechanisms of this game connect with the theme of this game, I think, yeah, it's brilliant. I just love it. Everything makes sense. All the choices make sense. What I adore about how they're treating this game is it's always growing. Like, I mean, the first version of Viticulture, then there's like Essential Editions, and then there's Tuscany, and there's always, he's always developing or growing that idea.
Yeah, and then there's like a new set of cards that just came out.
I was just going to say.
The Rhine Valley.
The best way to keep a game fresh, if it's a card-driven game, give us more cards.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I still have to get that new deck because I'm at the point now where I'm starting to understand what cards are out there and what cards are coming in, kind of thing.
Right. You're comfortable. You've seen everything already.
Yeah.
And you've seen it enough that you now want a little bit more.
And once again, Viticulture has an excellent solo mode with the Automa.
Oh, that solo and kind of like the solo campaign challenges. Like there's like the challenge one, challenge two. Oh man, have you gotten through them all?
I have maybe gotten. I think I'm on the second one. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I haven't pushed through because again, I'll start playing it and I'll kind of glance over at my collection and I'll hear a game go, "Hey, it's my turn," and then I'll have to take that game out and play it.
Perfect.
So I get distracted. You know, like Red Ball. Okay, sorry. Let's move on.
Hey.
Number eight.
Eight is another worker placement game. But it's so different. it's a worker placement game that doesn't really feel like a worker placement game. It feels like you're running through a recipe. And the game is Dominant Species.
Ooh. Yes.
I've grown up playing Ameritrash stuff, Dungeons & Dragons, Risk, and this idea of sometimes a game needs conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And in a game like Dominant Species, where it's the idea, you have your territorial map on the left side, and on the right side, you have I call it the recipe board, right? Because you start at the top and you work your way down. Part of the first part is you have a certain amount of workers, or I mean just the wooden pieces, right? And you decide on the left-hand side in order of, from a biology point of view, terminology, there's speciation, there's migration, there's all these shuns that are in this list, and thematically makes absolute sense. The mechanisms that connect this theme to the gameplay, I think, are so awesome in regards to, you know, a lot of the confusion sometimes happens is, do I dominate that tile area if I have more species on it? And the answer is no, because you need to have a food source. Mm-hmm. So if you have, from a survival point of view, if you're able to eat more food in that area than anybody else, then you have the capacity to dominate that area. And that domination, when it comes down to in that recipe list, there is a, I think the last one is domination. If you have a spot on the board that you've dominated, then you can claim a card on the side that is, again, so overpowered that a lot of people, oh, I hate this game, this is so unfair. And my opinion is, you can see
it coming.
What's coming down the pipe. You can completely understand what devastation is going to happen to any players who can be the first ones to pick this card. So you can either pick it as a offensive strategy, or you can pick it as a defensive strategy just to get it off the board and not have it impact you. So, yeah, that game is just so juicy.
Now, this is one that I think I would have predicted to be on your list. I'm just surprised that it's this low.
I felt so guilty having to peg in there, but it's newer to my collection, and I just hasn't had the game time necessary to. I mean, the more I play it, the more it'll come up this list. I guarantee that.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So that's Dominant Species at my number 8.
Number seven
is, I think, I'm just quickly looking at my list, I think it's the oldest game on this list.
Ooh.
And it is.
And by an old game, is it like an old game, or is it like?
No, not like, ancient. Like, not, it's like, not Moncala.
Like 5 years old.
Yeah.
Old.
No, it's it's like, yeah, I'd say close to 20, 30 years old. I'm not doing the math right now.
Oh, okay.
I compare every mechanism game that comes out to this game. So when you have, oh, it's an area control game, what does everybody compare to? El Grande.
I love this game.
And not only that, but I have the big box set. I have not even gotten into the expansions. I basically am staying in the base game mode, and I have no reason to, you know, even check out these expansions. I mean, I will eventually, but I have so much fun just in the base game mode because it is such a well-designed game. It is a Wolfgang Kramer and Richard Ulrich.
Yeah, this is one of the few games that I actually own the big box version as well, and I'm in the same boat. I haven't played with any. I think I've played with one expansion, and I can't even remember which one it was because it's been a while. Because we always just come back to that base game because it's so elegant already.
Yeah, and it's that idea of the meal is perfect. Why add anything else to it?
Yeah. We'll eventually.
We'll eventually want extra ketchup and some mayo. But right now, I mean,
it's just because the big box is the only one that's available. We can't actually just get just El Grande. Yeah. We had to buy the big box to get it.
Can I not get the full meal deal? No, you got to get the full meal deal. Okay. I'll get the full meal deal.
Supersized.
For those people who live underneath a rock, El Grande is, I think it's 1995, the same year that Catan came out. I believe. Okay. And area control, area influence. I don't know what BGG has for its description, but it is putting cubes on the map and moving other cubes on the map, getting them out of the way.
Well, in the big box, it's meeples.
And the big box is, yeah, that's right, it's meeples.
But the original version, it was just cubes.
But I mean, yeah, whatever representation, it is just statistical dominance in certain areas. And the card play is so...
Yeah, that kind of card drafting selection.
Yeah.
That the more powerful actions, but you don't get to put very many people on the board, where if you can take a weaker action, but you get to put lots of people on the board.
And, of course, can't mess with the king's area.
Can't mess with the king's area. That's a really unique mechanism. You can only put people where around where the king is.
Adjacent to that territory where the... Yeah.
Whereas I want to get into that area, but the king isn't near it. So I can't get into that area unless if I take an action to move the king. And that's not even saying that somebody's going to move the king later.
Exactly. And, of course, not only that are you trying to play your game, but you're trying to analyze everybody else's game to either be a problem to them or to get there first on them. Yeah. And let's talk about the Castillo.
All right, that whole try to keep track of who's put what into that tower.
I have so much fun with that because at the end of when you score it, even if I don't score any points for it, I get to put those dudes on the map somewhere. And that's the only time that you don't need to respect the king rule.
Yeah.
It's like, just put them on the map. So that's where I need to get people I'm going to start loading up the Castillo. I'm going to use that strategy.
Nah. Yeah, it's such a good game. Just good.
So
good.
That's El Grande at number seven.
Seven. Number six.
Oh, that was just about like get my 4x4 out. That was nice. Number six for me, Nippon.
Oh, yes, another one that I have not played, but I'm just ashamed that I have not.
Nippon, I'm starting to love What's Your Game. They put out such quality. We played Signori. Mm-hmm. That one just edged on my honorable mentions list. But Nippon was the game that I played from that company that immediately made my head flip on a swivel and go, what's with this company? This is the most clever game. The theme is Japan in its transition from its traditional cultural society into more of an industrial revolution society. And there's area influence on the map, area control on the map. There's resource building. There's factory engine influence. There's so much delicious choices in this game.
Yeah, I remember you talk about this game all the time because you play this quite regularly with your Wednesday night group sometimes.
Yeah.
And I am always so jealous because whenever I'm not at Wednesday night game, you guys seem to play this game and I'm like, oh, I need to play it some more.
One of the clever designs of this game is instead of putting meeples on the board, you're taking meeples off the board. Mm-hmm. And that is also the timer in the game. And this idea of taking meeples from an area you have these meeples that are set out that are in categories, and each category has a choice A or a choice B. And when you take these three meeples off, you have to put them onto your board, and they're different colored meeples, and sometimes if you have too much of a variety of different colored meeples, you have in your workforce too many different trades. Because you have to pay each trade, or you have to allot resources to each trade. So if you have a huge variety of trades, you're not money in, money out. You're not making money. You're not, you're not accelerating, or you're not advancing on this engine building, this domination on the map. So just that idea, the reverse worker placement, that's what caught me, and then looking deeper into this game and all the choices and all the synergy connections and the factories delivering to certain areas, and certain areas are going to have certain values. The idea to me of each game is going to be so different because of just the slight changes in setup.
When you describe it and everything, and I don't think this is a game that you've played before, but it sounds very much like a Village.
I have not.
Yeah, Village.
But I like the brands. They do some.
It has that same
work.
Kind of mechanism where you're taking the timer is you're taking the actions off of the board. You're taking the workers off of to take the action on the board.
Well, there you go. You need to play this game.
Yes, and then you also need to play Village.
I do. Let's stop. Oh. No, we got to finish this. Yeah. So for
Nippon.
Me, Nippon number six.
Number five.
Number five. I'm just quickly looking at my list and. This is, I believe, the only guy who hits my list twice. And it's another Uwe Rosenberg game.
Okay, I gotta look. I got you only have so many Uwe games on your shelf.
I got about 6 or 7 on my shelf.
And I'm trying to think of which one. Okay, gotta give me a hint.
It's a French port.
No, that was too easy of a hint.
Le Havre.
Ooh, this is such a good game.
Oh,
this is juicy.
This is, and a lot of people have said, it's a very simple game. You have two choices. You take the products on the dock, mm-hmm. or you put your worker on a building, and you evaluate the building.
Simple.
Simple. The depth.
3 hours later.
If you're playing the short game, the depth to these choices and the connectivity to the buildings and the resources and what's your plan? Are you going to take, you know, this pile of fish on the dock and then, oh, well, if I have a pile of fish, I might as well get a smokehouse. And if I get a smokehouse, I might as well turn that into, you know, and mm-hmm. this and Alice's, you know, rabbit hole goes deeper and deeper. And the best thing about this game is there are so many different rabbit hole options that you can tuck yourself into and explore.
Absolutely. This game, it warrants so many multiple plays because there is so much to explore to be able to do.
What I enjoy the most is, and again, don't take this wrong way, what I enjoy the most with this game is getting my butt handed to me by somebody else, because then I can watch. Because
they develop their engine faster and better than yours.
Absolutely. I can watch what they're doing and go, all right, this game for me is now Asterix learning game. I've played this game 15 times, but it's still a learning game because I just got handed to me the most devastating defeat, but I learned another strategy or another, building connection engine system. So to me, again, we talked about this before. If you continually lose at a game and it's on your top 10 list, it must be a really good game.
Oh, this one's fantastic.
I think I might have 20%. That's my win record on this game. But my enjoyment record, I mean, it's in my top 5. So, Le Havre.
Hey, I wish that was a stat that I can put into BG's stats. Enjoyment factor.
Enjoyment factor, yeah. Body rush, 10 out of 10. Nice. So, I mean, I could continue talking about Le Havre. It's you got one worker and one choice. Two choices. Either the resources off the dock or pick a building. And there's sometimes where I go into a decision coma.
Yep. Do it over and over and over.
Yeah.
And over.
Oh, yeah, you could run the engine until someone goes, you know what, I'm going to put my dude in here. I'm going
to
block
you. We need to stop this.
I'm going to buy this building. So now that if you need to use this building, you have to at least pay me mm-hmm. some food or some resources to get into this building. So, yeah, I don't think there's any take that in it.
Not really.
The only take that would be to refuse or to create an obstacle, like we just said, in someone's system.
Right.
So, yeah.
So good. It's definitely top 5 worthy.
Oh, thank definitely. You. So now at number 5 for me, Le Havre.
Number four,
I have... It's awesome game, but I have a unique relationship with it because it was one of those, it wasn't a gateway for me, but it was one of those first games where I started to understand how cool this modern board game, hobby can be. And
this one's got some sentimental value to it.
But again, when I say what it is, you'll be like, oh, it deserves to be there. It's the only Steffenfeld game on the list. Castles of Burgundy. I can even let you talk about this game because what you're going to say is pretty much what I'm going to say. All the choices. You got two dice.
Right.
And what are you going to do?
So elegant.
Yeah. What are you going to do with those two dice? Are you going to go get a building? Are you going to put it into your standby area? Are you going to put it into your tableau? Are you going to ship stuff? I mean, that whole... I think the necessity of being first in that game is unsurmountable.
Especially in the later rounds, you definitely want to be up on that shipping track so that you're getting like the first, at least within the first two picks.
All of the games where I've been challenged and I've had to work hard at it, I've noticed it's because I'm not on that, not up on that shipping lane.
Right. And this one, I love this game for the combo building. that you like that you can chain together action after action. If you can do a turn where you get like four tiles,
yeah,
like that's huge.
Yeah, and have a castle in between every one of them. Oh, I got another free turn. Oh, another free turn.
Oh, I get this. Well, that allows me to take this, and oh, this one allows me to put this on, which now allows me to take this. And
that game, I always joke about. I'm happy and sad at the same time. That game, I'm upset and intrigued at the same time when I see an opponent start to chain things together, because all of a sudden I'll sit there and go, oh, no. But then my brain's going, that is so cool. That is so cool. Yeah. You've got this. It's like dominoes.
When you play that opponent who just chained together like three tiles together and you're like, I need to take some workers.
Yeah. 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 I don't like what you did, but it was nice to watch. So, yeah, Steffenfeld. I mean, I could have included a whole bunch of other Feld games on here, but to me, that's the one that steps above the others. Now, I need to play more. I have several. I've got Bora Bora, Macau,
Trajan.
I mean, I've got lots of Feld games, but I think because the emotional connection with this game, and the fact that it's such a delicious game. Mm-hmm. I mean, the choices are just amazing. But sometimes there's individuals that suffer from a bit of analysis paralysis.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm one of them.
Yeah. Well, you and there's a few others that all of a sudden the thumb and the two fingers hit the forehead, mm-hmm. and you turn into like a marble statue of the thinker.
He locked up.
Oh, yeah. He locked up. And for me, Mr. Sarcastic, I'll sit beside people and just do elevator music and dun, 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 dun. And they'll just sit there, look at me and go, okay, I get it. I'll make a choice. So that game just has so much fun built into it, for me at least.
That's so cool.
And yeah.
That's top five worthy.
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, at number four, Castles of Burgundy.
Number three,
because I'm French, I love saying this game properly. Trois.
Ooh.
Okay, I
thought this one was going to be your number one.
Really?
I thought this was going to be your number one. So
when
top five?
When I explain to you my decision for number one, you'll go, okay, I accept that. But yeah, Trois is, again, I love my dice, and I know that the dice hate me, and the dice will do everything to make my game suck. But this game, I love the fact that I can buy your dice. If I have the resources.
That is the coolest part
about
this game.
Absolutely. And going first, again, I mean, who doesn't like going first? But the idea of rolling your dice, evaluating what you have as dice, and then determining who's going before me. Because, yeah, I've got these big number dice, but doesn't mean that they'll be there when it's my turn.
Well, exactly. And the cool part about it, too, is that the cost of buying your dice all depends on how many dice I'm going to be using.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if I'm only going to use one dice, it doesn't cost as much. But if I want to use it in a set of three dice, well, it's going to be fairly expensive to buy your dice.
And there's times where I'm upset that you're taking my dice resources, but I'm getting a handful of money for this so that I can do something else with. So there's never... It's never a lose-lose. It's sort of, oh, I lost a dice, but I won money,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's this balance that keeps happening. For those people who don't understand, Trois, is thematically, it's about rebuilding a medieval French village. And I think the idea is that they're always under attack from the outside because you've got that bottom enemy track. Mm-hmm. And there's four areas that you can be: administrative building, military building, the church building area, and then I'm including building the cathedral as another part of that game, because those are victory points. Those are part of the end of game strategy points. And
I like it too that you have this the secret character that's going to do some end of game scoring, but everybody gets to participate in that end of game scoring. So when I'm looking at you, what you're doing, and I'm trying to also guess what your kind of end of game scoring card is, because I want to also try to maybe be working towards that as well.
Yeah, like if I see someone building heavy into the cathedral, Maybe, right away,
maybe
I'm thinking
they have the cathedral end of game scoring card.
Yeah, so I'm gonna try and do as much of that as well without getting off of my strategy. And then let's talk about these cards for the admin building and military and the church. The synergy that happens, and first of all, the variability. I mean, there's,
well, especially if you pick up the expansion, the Ladies of Troyes.
Yeah,
adds even more variability into the cards that can come out.
Now, as we said with El Grande. The expansion, I mean, the Ladies of Troyes, I played it a couple times, but I thought, you know what, the extra dice, the purple dice, that's great. But I've still yet to work in the strategy of having those ramparts be part of my game system. And probably because I'm just so focused on the base game that I keep forgetting that element of...
Well, this is another one that the expansion is great. It's there and everything, but the base game is so elegant.
Yeah.
Like we said it with El Grande, you don't need to explore out. It's nice to have and bust it out every now and then, but the base game is just so good.
Sometimes you just don't mess with perfection.
No.
Right? It's in balance. Don't touch it, right? And again, that was a game that I bought earlier on, because of all the research I did, and you know, I mean, games are getting expensive, and you always want to be particular on the games that you're buying, right? I mean, I won't go out and buy music that I don't like, right? Mm-hmm. So, that thinking for me fits into this area. And when I discovered this game, saw how the dice worked, saw how it connects with the theme, I just fell in love with this game. Absolutely.
Beautiful.
So that's Troyes for number three.
Number two.
When I showed you this game, I think your head exploded. And okay. This was on, I think, okay. When we went to MeepleCon.
Okay.
And I said, hey, you got to play this game. It's so Euro that I mean, you're going to start developing a German sense in part of your brain.
Okay.
And the game is Brussels, 1893.
Nice.
This.
I really do. Dig this game.
Then you lead us in with this. What, when you played this game and I showed you this game, what were the things that made that itch fire, or the fireworks pop off in your head?
It's just that there's so many different things that are interconnected in this game. Going from where I put my meeple down onto that grid to take an action, but also it is also working towards that, it's a bit of an auction too, of being able to do something at the very end of the round as well. If I have more money, I think it's more money in that.
Yeah.
That
you
column.
Win the card on the bottom.
I win the card on the bottom, so I have to think about where do I put my, what action do I want to take, and do I want to work towards getting that bonus,
winning that auction,
at the end of the round. And then there's so many other little things around that I was like, What do I do? What am I going to work towards?
Well, and the part too that as you said, there's so many different things that are connected. You described that auction part with the card, but as you put your meeple onto that board to claim an action, at the end of the round, there's an area control around that center red shield.
That's the third thing that you have to think about when you're putting down your meeple. I'm like, oh my gosh!
And then that's connected to the city graph where. The higher you push yourself up on that shield scale,
is how
that
many points
value,
you score.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much to think about just putting one little dude on the grid.
And then how do we make money? Well, we sell art.
Right.
So there's that little
which
matrix.
Which is not a strategy I've usually used too often.
Yeah. There's that matrix of I can buy this one and I can manipulate the matrix and nudge it into an area where I can sell this colored art for profit.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can get into also the idea of building.
Oh yeah, the
buildings into
the
that
building tableau thing on the side of your board, and then the characters
triggers your secondary action.
Yeah, and then there's the characters that if I have a character in this column, I get bonus points for having extra money at the end of the game, or I get points for every character that I have acquired.
Your math brain and the possible matrices of point generating, collecting. And when I watched you start to analyze and understand this game, I was so amused by your brow ridge was like moving left side was going up right. You were just, oh, no way, this is connected to this. And
this is a game that I want in my collection, but I cannot find it for like a decent price. Like I want this game because it scratches all the Euro itches that I really, really enjoy. So this is one game that I want to have.
And my favorite take that isn't really a take that. What? This game has, I consider the take that is play more efficiently than the other person.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best take that.
This is a very good efficiency puzzle.
Oh, yeah. And like you said, those character cards, you can either burn it off right away for a resource, or you can hang on to it, but you have to pay this guy.
Yeah, you have to pay for them at the end of the round.
But there is a benefit if you can pay. The victory point connection to the modifier is incredible. I mean, if that one person who's listening to this podcast, you have to buy this game. This is an awesome game.
You have to...
Or at least play it.
Play it. They do have it on the online game website, Board Show.
Okay.
You can play this online if you want to understand what we're talking about. Go definitely check it out, and you're gonna realize, yeah, this is something that I need.
Now, not that all the other games had lame artwork. This artwork,
gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. It's that era. It's that Art Deco. I love my Art Deco. But it's that genuine. I mean, I think for me, at least with this game, that the art helps with immersing yourself into this game. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just so era authentic. I love it. Now we're moving up. So that was Brussels, 1893 at number two.
Wow. And finally, number one.
Now, remember when I told you that I have a tie? I haven't even said the tie yet. My tie is at number one.
No, that's okay.
But
I'll allow it.
I'll explain to you because
now I'm intrigued because that means there's two games that beat out Trois. I definitely thought Trois was going to be your number one.
Okay, so I had said that one of the critical requirements for me is that it has a good solo play. Mode.
Yep.
So understanding, and again, I know I'm totally cheating, but my tie at number one is Mage Knight and Robinson Crusoe.
Wow, completely.
You probably knew Mage Knight was going to be there.
Yeah.
Or in the top three.
After you went to this, I knew Mage Knight, but oh, Robinson Crusoe, that's interesting.
And so both of them, I mean, Mage Knight is, in my opinion, is only a solo game. I mean, if you have other people playing, that's great. But to me, it's one of those games where it's card driven, it's card drafting, it's kind of dungeon diving, it's a dungeon diver for Euro fans,
mm-hmm.
And this is one of those games where because it's a solo game, it's okay to stare at the board for 15 minutes while you're looking at your hand, going, "How am I going to make this work? There's no way I can make this work." And then in the 18th minute, you go, Oh, yeah, I could do this and this and this. And I slaughtered him, right? And then, of course, time to go get my cards from the gallery, right? I could go on for hours about this game. But I would just be repeating what a lot of other people have said already, that it's intelligent, it's challenging, there's so much variability. And again, I've got the expansions, and I still have yet to play any of the expansions. I'm still thoroughly enjoying the base game.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to, and again, probably my brain's going, oh man, having to learn the expansion, like the Lost Legion expansion, that's like having to take a seminar class. Right.
Now, what makes Robinson Crusoe a tie?
Because both of them are my favorite solo games.
Okay.
If I'm going to, and again, like I said, a lot of my gaming now is turning into, as far as hours of gaming goes, my solo time is starting to creep in with my group time.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, then I want to identify my number one slot as my two favorite solo games. Robinson Crusoe, for those who haven't played, it's the theme is that, you know, you're shipwrecked on an island and you need to survive. And the game is trying to kill you. Bottom line, the game's trying to kill you. That's it.
Enough said. Try to get around it.
You have, on one side of the board, you have the map that you bring the tiles out and you explore and you find, you know, food and you find, you know, resources. On the right side of the map are items. Depending on the scenario you're playing, there's certain items that you can expend dice to learn how to build something. And doesn't mean that you're going to be successful, depending on your dice roll. And again, I like I said, the dice hate me, and sometimes I hate dice because of the randomness, but this is a randomness that you're able to at least nudge, manipulate, influence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so even if I do successfully complete, you know, building an item or inventing an item, there is the chance that I could pick up an encounter card or an invent card. Now, what I love about these cards is you draw the card. The top part of the card is, this is what happens now. Make a decision. You make a decision. The card goes back into your events deck that you're drawing a card every round. So that card, let's say, oh, I ate some fruit.
Mm-hmm.
That goes back in. Oh, for now, I've got some food. But as this card comes back, the secondary part would be, oh, this food was rotten or it was poisonous. Now you suffer an injury.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, I know that there's a card in there that could possibly come up. I better find some medicine. So you have this ability to possibly predict upcoming events and be prepared to take on that challenge or be prepared to have an answer to that challenge. And also there's, I think the game comes with four different scenarios. Like one's just your typical shipwreck. And what I am starting to enjoy and from the teacher perspective, looking at this game going, oh man, this engine or this architecture, this game design architecture is ripe for putting different themes on. Because there is the expansion that I have that I'm not going to jump into yet. I'm still learning it. Is the Charles Darwin expansion.
Oh, okay.
Where you are Charles Darwin on the Beagle and you're in the Galapagos Islands and you're collecting things, right? So that architect, that engine system or that architecture is to me, from my perspective, you could put anything into it.
Which is what I think they tried to do with First Martians.
Yeah. I don't think they were successful with that. I think from my view, there was a problem with the app getting in the way of the game.
Yeah. I'm just talking about putting a different theme on top of it is what they were doing with First Martians.
Yeah.
The same thing with the co-op and the solo mode. And
like there's a scenario, I think it was a fan-created scenario called King Kong, where you go to the island and you have to capture King Kong without dying. I'm just giggling at how inventive and creative this game system allows not necessarily just the player but the community to go, hey, I have an idea, and I believe, it's just conjecture, but I think there's some fan-generated expansions that are potentially coming out or that are being posted on BGG.
I like it when designers do that.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you've created this idea and the fans want to contribute to your creation.
Same thing happens with Time Stories.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of fan-made print-and-plays that you can do.
To me, that is exactly what board games are for. Is to create community, to create inclusion, to create camaraderie, to create cohorts.
Oh, there we go.
There we go. Little cohort plug. Mage Knight and Robinson Crusoe. I cheated big time, but I'm going to call number one.
I opened the door for that.
Yeah, I'm calling number one solo games.
Solo games.
Now in that category, the one that didn't get in, that is just on the edge, is Nemo's War.
I was going to say Nemo's War.
I have to play that one more for me to substantiate.
And you also haven't tracked down a copy of Seventh Continent yet.
Oh, don't get me started. All right, so
you're kicking yourself not backing that one.
Yeah, but you know, sometimes life gets in the way.
Yeah.
So there's my list. Give me your conjecture about my list.
That's a solid list.
Surprises.
A few surprises, like Twa not being at number one, but now I can see why. But yeah, Mage Knight, absolutely.
So the logic is understandable.
It's right there. Bruxelles, 1893. Yeah, that's a solid number two.
Solid. Yeah, poop jokes aren't the funniest, but they're a solid number two.
Dominant species being so low, that was a little bit of a surprise. But yeah, the things that are above it, yeah, I can see your train of thought with going with it. So many worker placement games.
I'm looking at this going, wow, wow, there's a lot of, I mean, you can consider dice placement as worker placement. So there's, holy moly, yeah. I've got a...
Another big surprise is that Kemet being in the honorable mention realm instead of being on this list.
Well, Kate, from what you know of me and my game appreciation, what would I take off that list for Kemet to go on the list?
I take out Castles of Burgundy, but do you explain it perfectly of your sentimental value to that game and whatever? For me personally, Castles of Burgundy would have fell off and Kemet would have went on.
That's the only...
That's my opinion.
Concordia. I know you love Concordia.
Concordia would be great. Concordia, if I had an honorable mention, Concordia would be like in an honorable mention category.
And Great Western Trail. I know. I mean, you have that game.
Yeah, I own that one as well. I love that game to death too. But that also did not make my top 10. It wasn't even a thought for my top 10.
What I was thinking with my honorable mention list is with more plays, they would get on the list.
It would get on.
Yeah.
If you would have told me that we were doing honorable mentions, I would have done them too.
Well, I didn't even know until I started writing it last night. I started my list and going, well, I can't do a top. I can do a top 15. You know what? I'm going to make an honorable mention list and a tie.
Perfect.
So I worked that out. Well, there you go.
Everybody has a little bit of insight into the brain of Norm LaPage.
The worker placement brain. Yeah. Yeah. It's like that's how my brain works. Some of it's not working until I put somebody, a little worker, in that part of my lobe. Frontal lobe, not working. Oh, let's put a worker there.
And just the caveat, too, is that Norm hasn't been in the hobby as long as a lot of people have been in this hobby.
Yes and no. I mean, when I told you about my Monday night risk group, every Monday night for 24 years. But to me, that's more of, how should we say, a deficit.
Now.
But the modern board games, yeah. The moment that I just started to discover modern board gaming, I think that was in like 2015, 2016.
Only a few years ago.
Yeah. And yeah, I kind of cannonballed into the pool, hanging on to everything in the backyard.
That's awesome.
And no complaints, though.
Nope.
Yeah. I mean,
this has been great.
Okay. So this is a good time to segue out of it.
Maybe just wrap, put everything in a nice little bow.
And put a worker placement on it. So thanks for listening to Cardboard Conjecture. I'm your host, Norm.
And I'm Ryan.
And we'll catch you later. Take care. We are Bridge City Board Gamers, and you can find us on YouTube. You can follow us on Twitter at BC Board Gamers. Our Facebook page is Saskatoon Tabletop Games Community, and on Board Game Geek, Guild number 3039.
brought to you by the number nine.
I get to redo that. That was lame.
Okay.